League of Ireland Late Night
on Off the Ball.
I'm really floundering going into games, lads. I mean, I keep going and I really hope they turn it around, but it's just hard going in.
League of Ireland Late Night, live every Friday from 10 on Twitter Spaces.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is time for the Hurling Pod review of the league finals. Two pretty one-sided games today, won by Cork and Waterford in front of a sellout crowd at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. The debate goes on about whether this should have been a doubleheader, particularly with the empty seats that were there kind of midway through the second game and the lack of fans from Cork and Tipperary turning up to watch the 1B final. Maybe it would have been better to have that in a single venue. I'm here from beyond when the podcast is recorded to make it make sense as to how it's about to start in a moment. We again had another scare about the recording. We were going to do this podcast live. We're having a few Wi-Fi issues. We decided to record. Almost didn't hit the record button or almost hit it twice again. So that's where the podcast is going to pick up in a moment. James Skell, Paul Murphy, looking back on both league finals and everything else besides hurling news-wise. If you want to skip along to where the podcast would normally start and not get a preamble from us about recording and things that can go wrong, skip to 6 minutes and 15 seconds if you want to pick it up on the start of our chat about the Division 1A final. All right, enjoy.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skell and Paul Murphy.
As you can see, the red button is up there now, but I don't like... as we get into this, but it tells me that you need to confirm that you want to save it, as if like I'm just recording for the crack.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't. Before we even record it. Maybe yeah, this is ready to start.
I still think back and go, the three of us, what idiots that we let go for what 55 minutes then realised, what are we doing?
That'll happen you once and that's it.
Yeah. To be fair, right, that recording that went wrong was entirely my fault. And I realise this is now part of the pod for this week. There's no way I'm going to cut this out. But that was entirely
like
my fault.
A very slow, mellow introduction into the pod this week that we're just randomly talking about being terrified of not recording the pod.
Yeah, but Murph, at the time, right, you and I both knew it was not recording and we chose to keep quiet until we got to like 60 minutes.
Did you actually know it wasn't?
I knew, something up with this. That red button should be up there in the corner. But I'm not going to say anything because I am 50% wrong. I was in my mind. and then Will goes, oh, shit. And then straight away.
No, I didn't cop it at all that night. Jesus, what? I was dejected.
Oh, I couldn't believe it.
The word I haven't heard in a while.
Like, for whatever reason, I felt no need to look towards that corner. And I look at it religiously now for a rough guide on the time. And I just, for once, I didn't look over. And it was only about maybe half an hour in or whatever. We got to about 40 minutes, I think, before we realised it. And yeah. I kind of went, wait a minute. Have they moved that over there somewhere? Yeah. Where's it gone?
But like, I like the way you say it. I look at it for a rough guide of time, as if we ever stick to time. As if there's ever been a, oh, yeah, we're going to have to tidy this up. Like, was it 2 weeks ago? It was like an hour and 35, an hour and 40?
Yeah.
For the first pod?
Yeah.
Like,
it brings me on to a question.
Yeah, go on.
Have you ever made like a monumental fuck up at work?
Probably, yeah. I can't, like, off the top of my head, I can't think of one, but definitely things have gone wrong. I remember, again, definitely doing an interview good few years back, which was like a commercial interview. And right as it finished up, might have been Michel Platini, maybe. And it basically, he was over doing a whole UEFA thing and it was part of his function. Yeah, talking there to, you know, former Ballon d'Or winner, former European champion, you know, one
currently
of the best
being investigated
of the generation.
For lots of
embezzlement.
This was long before him and, you know, his buddies got in any kind of trouble. But it finished up and I realised that as I was hitting stop on the recorder, the card was corrupting. Because sometimes you see when it just doesn't write to the recorder. And you can imagine when you need to turn around after you've sat down with Michel Platini for whatever it was, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and you're like, look, I'm really sorry, but we got to go again from the top here.
Yeah,
That's never good.
Black or blue.
Never good. Other bad ones I can't think of. Look, if I come up with one, we'll stick it into the members pod.
But it's probably also not the form that you want to say it, like onto, you know, well, an open podcast that, this time I made an absolute hames of myself in work.
Yeah.
Unless it's completely innocent.
Or, like my employers, very good chance they listen to something going out in their own product and they realise you've done something stupid. We definitely had a few recording issues from time to time. Not my fault, by the way. But I remember All-Ireland final week last year, I was hosting and we accidentally saved a file in the wrong name. And it meant that the preview we had done for the All-Ireland final on Tuesday went back out on Wednesday. And you can imagine what the texts were like coming in. It was like, you cheap bastards playing the same piece twice. I'm like, you don't realize we had a whole other lovely piece which we recorded just before the show started. And I remember an unmixed podcast went out, which I wasn't involved in, a couple of Christmases ago, which, as you can imagine, was the entire preamble back when everyone was recording it on Zoom, the whole conversation beforehand, which was joking about what they were going to talk about. Mm. It's fairly safe. Like, if this goes wrong, I'll just take it out. And also, there was loads of swearing within the podcast itself and also in the preamble before the podcast. Now, that goes out in podcast form. Jim's going to send you a YouTube comment going, my kids are in the car. Why'd you do that? You put it out on national radio, not so good. Especially not 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday when people are getting ready for Christmas.
Yeah, like, that's cutting the lawn and stuff. And like, Well, Christmas, sorry. Okay,
it's Christmas, but like, you imagine the kid, you're bringing the kids down to Kildare Village for the day. What we flick on? Ah, wonder what Off the Ball are talking about. They're playing some classic interviews. Let's have a listen to, you know, a particularly specialist podcast, which is on there. And lads are effing and jeffing. And joking about what they're going to talk about, and probably entirely different characters. And it took ages for anyone to notice it because the producer had gone to get a burrito, I think. Sorry. He wasn't there. And the sound up was also gone. And you see, the rule of thumb, before we get into this, without giving too much away, one of two people should sit in the control room even when a pre-record is going out in case it goes wrong. Because the only other one I can think of that went really wrong, that wasn't anyone's fault. People might know JP Gilborn because he's now off with Ray Foley on Today FM. Used to be our producer on OTB. Again, this must have been during COVID, I think, because we were remote while we were recording it. But Nathan, Ger and I recorded a news round on the Friday because we were going into another piece that was also pre-recorded. And for whatever reason, it corrupted. And it was like a Beatles album from the 1960s. If you played it backwards, it had a message going through it. So if you can imagine, the top of the show is meant to be Ger and I talking about something, and Nathan then comes in part two to talk about the football that weekend, or the joy of football without crowds. And Nathan was running backwards through the piece, where Ger and I were going forwards and Nathan was going backwards. So there was a Premier League, preview going, blah, 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 and it went out for about 20 minutes.
And there's Alice thinking they're going mad at home because two of the voices are going the right direction and one is going backwards.
Yeah, it was like, has my radio gone out of sync here? Or is the, like, if you're online, is the player corrupted? What the hell is going on? And I was at home, and it's the most messages I think I've ever got about a radio piece while it was going out, because everyone had F all to do during COVID except for listening to the radio. Wrong piece going out. Or a corrupted piece, at least. So yeah, radio is dangerous and pre-records are dangerous. But here we are, pre-recording the Hurling Pod after the National League finals. Hopefully you enjoyed that unexpected interlude. No stopping the Cork goal machine, though, lads. The Rebels Division 1A League champions, first time since 1998. They really blew away Tipperary in the second quarter of the game, across the first half in particular. 43,000 packed in to watch Connolly, Fitzgibbon, Toomey all find the net in the second quarter of the game. 13 goals now in three games for Pat Ryan's team. It's their first national title since the All-Ireland 20 years ago as well. Also, Tipperary now licking their wounds at this stage. Difficult start to the Munster Championship for them. It'll be Limerick to start in Munster after that 10-point defeat today, while Cork are now getting ready to go back to Clare on Easter Bank Holiday weekend. And Stephen Bennett, he scored 12 points. There's 12 points for Brian Deignan in the game as well. Waterford enjoyed a 4-point win against Offaly in the Division 1B final, which we'll talk about as well. I don't think 4 points was particularly reflective of the way that game went. Waterford were 14-15 up at one stage during the game. It was really kind of the final quarter that brought Offaly back into it. These finals, Gael, a little bit disappointing in the end, weren't they? I mean, they weren't the most competitive affair, were they?
No, I thought the occasion was going to be set up for two very good, boisterous games. Great to see a good crowd in for particularly the second game, but it just kind of it was both sets of winners really were just a class above today. To be fair, they were operating at a level that just their competitors couldn't live with, and it was kind of a similar style in the sense that like both Waterford and Cork had extremely high energy. Their movement was excellent. Their touch was very slick. You know, they were kind of first to every battle. They say they were first to the breaks. They were first, forwards were first out in front, first to get goals. Like they were just very, very forward and forthright and very workmanlike performances from both. And it was levels whereby when you come up against those kind of teams, it's very, very hard to stop them, particularly in the second game whereby, you know, Cork were just, they were everywhere. They were being pushed by their probably 30,000 people in their own stadium, and they were coming from all angles. They weren't lethargic. They weren't playing one direction. They were playing multi-direction. They were putting a few things in front of Tipperary, particularly with Shane Barrett on the wing coming very, very deep, causing awful trouble with creating space on the inside line, running very direct in terms of goals. And that's one point to note we spoke about last week, in the sense that we knew Cork were going to go for goals, get goals, But then we raised the question about Tipperary having to get goals to live with Cork. It didn't happen. And like, it's gas to think that the game started off really well. I'm going to the second game first. Started really well in the sense that it was like, you know, 6-6, 7-7, 8-8. You're thinking, geez, we could be in for a right good game here. Next thing, there's 10 points in it. Like, it's, and you're just wondering, where did that come out of? And it was the most simplistic, basic type of hurling to get that 10-point gap. It was like a puck out would come from Tipperary, Cork would get hit to ground, win the break, turn and move, inside forward line movement was fantastic, goal. And it's that simple. It was the ability for Cork to win, get the primary ball or secondary ball off a puck out, pick it up, find a space runner, like Shane Bart or others, right? Then move it into an inside line who are out front, retain the ball, turn, attack, goal. Like that's fundamental, basic, you know, scripted hurling that seems so simple on the face of it, but to do that and execute it in a high octane game was extremely impressive. And go back in an hour earlier, which with regard to Waterford, very similar way in the way which they stretched out their lead in the first half was they were absolutely dominating the Offaly puck out. Offaly couldn't get a foothold at all, from my reading of it, in the sense that every puck out they had, you know, Waterford were just congesting the middle between the 245s. Same thing, get to ground, break, go through a tackle, and into a space runner in the forwards, whereby they had, you feel like they had 40 square yards of space. And just, it's a very, very difficult proposition for Offaly to take care of because we've often said it here, marking space or marking the man, you can't do both. So the full back line inside for Offaly under ferocious pressure. But it wasn't of their doing, to be fair, just they were getting dominated. That's all it was. And when Offaly had their purple patch then in the second half, they flipped the script. They did the same thing, but unfortunately, the gap was too broad. It was just too broad, you know. And like, even though the likes of Dighton and Dunbar came into the game really well, were effective, but the gap was just too far. And look, if you look at both games, you can kind of use a very, very similar assessment. Both teams who won the game dominated the air, dominated the ground, dominated the legs and the energy, and then their scoring efficiency was off the charts. Like, so very, very, very well-deserved winners. There's no issues there.
Yeah. Cork, obviously a lot made. Murph, I've even mentioned the 13 goals now in three games, going back to Ennis when they really, really opened up. And again, three goals scored today, which were fairly crucial. But how important is it for Cork? Because again, if you're here for this podcast this week to try and dampen the hype on Cork, good luck. That is not going to happen. No goals conceded again. So this is three games in a row where they haven't conceded a goal. I saw some people complaining again that they were cynically fouling out the pitch, and you're probably going to get that, and there were pull downs. We talked about that, about the Galway game a couple of weeks ago. The simple fact of the matter is this Cork team is effective. They stop coughing up goal chances as well.
They do, yeah. And like, the more glaring thing about Cork is that it's goal scoring is how dominant they are. Like, okay, grand, they got their few goals today, but I kept just seeing opportunities where, particularly at the start of the game, a ball mightn't have went to hand or someone mightn't have rose the ball, and you could see the runners were there, like they were really tempting it there the whole time. Great that they kept a clean sheet, which is, you know, it probably goes back to that thing of defenders winning championships, you know, attackers winning games and all that. But I actually have no problem with that. I think Stephen Skehill said it there a few weeks ago. I have no problem with the game management side of it, that Cork, you know, when they go ahead by 10 points or 6 points, whatever you want to call it, and they get a sniff that the opposition are going through and goal and there's an overlap. It is cynical fouling, call it what you want, but good teams will do it because you're basically saying, yeah, I'll take my punishment. You're giving your punishment, be the yellow card, free in, whatever it's going to be. But you're managing the game within the rules and that's no problem. And that's, we probably said it previously where you go back 3 years ago and that wasn't present in Cork. And it's probably that weakness that we talk about that, I wouldn't even call it honesty. It was maybe just, look, it's been called softness previously. That's not there. That's not there at the moment, you know. And I really just got this sense of feeling. And we'll talk about Tipperary and we'll talk about Offaly and Waterford and all that. But after the game, when I saw the crowd on the field and I heard, you know, even during the game, I heard the Cork crowd cheering, the defending, the tackling, the hooks and the blocks, all that stuff. They really appreciate it. Like, I think it was Rob Downey or Owen Downey, not sure which one. Got a great tackle there maybe 10 minutes to go. Did the game won. Going back towards his own goal. And again, these are just flickers in my head. Flicked it out. I think O'Leary picked it up then, popped out a pass, and they just killed it. And up the other end, got a point. They won by 10. They were probably 15 or 16 points better. And you could probably say the same then as well about Waterford and Offaly. Granted, Waterford brought it back to about four, or Offaly brought it back to about 4 points. You know, you're probably talking 5 or 6 minutes to go. And you got a feeling that they could kick on. But then Waterford tagged on 2 points and kind of just brought it back out. To be fair, Waterford were probably the better team by about 9 or 10 points, if you're being honest on the day. But going back to Cork after the game, seeing the crowd on this field, seeing the players, I was even just looking like, you know, Kingston coming in, Declan Dalton coming on, Coleman coming on. I was like, this is like, if ever there was a time that Cork are primed for it, and I know there'll be Cork fans saying, oh, stop, no, we don't want to hear it. I don't think that's a problem for this Cork panel at the moment. I really don't. And I've been one of the lads that think that I've been let down by Cork before when I've predicted that they're going to win. I really don't get that feeling of them at the moment. There's something about them, about the bit, the way they're going about their business at the moment, that whoever's going to be in front of them this year, it's going to be tough and dangerous. There's a long way to go. We're getting into the series hurling now. But from everything I've seen from every team so far, Cork just seem in such a really good place at the moment, and like, so deserving winners today. They were outstanding.
Yeah. Micheál O'Donnell on TG Carr afterwards, Skell, was talking to Dara Fitzgibbon, and he kind of said that to Dara, who was naturally kind of playing things down and saying, look, we've got a very difficult game coming up against Clare in a few weeks' time, and we need to concentrate now in Munster. And he was saying, well, look, it's not the most significant thing here that you had the vast majority of 43,000 people in Páirc Uí Chaoimh with an expectation that you were going to win, and you won. And previously, people were criticising them last year, Skell. Remember when there was the crowd invasion after the Limerick win? Mm-hmm. And people said, oh, you still have to win the last round game, and this celebration is going to look very silly if you don't back it up. And then Cork did back it up all the way to an All-Ireland final and took an All-Ireland final to extra time. I don't think these players mind dealing with pressure.
I don't. And like, I was, my mind casted back to the 2021 All-Ireland final win, and I was trying to see, what is there much of a, you know, a, I suppose, how many players in that team currently occupy the team today? So I just picked the team, and assess both teams that hit today's final in the final 21. So they have Patrick Collins is the goalie, right? They have four of their six backs still playing today. They have one of the midfielders and they don't need one of the forwards. So there's been a complete changeover, you know, in personnel in only three seasons, not even four, because I'm not coming 25 season yet. In three seasons, you could say they've had, let's say, more than 50% of their team changed over. So this team for me doesn't carry any baggage per se, you know, that they've had in the past. We've always questioned Cork about, you know, about resilience and about toughness and about physicality and about when things get tough, what they do. This team, to me, is absolutely 100% going in the right direction. They are in the right direction. They're occupying the number one spot now nationally. I don't think anybody can disagree with that. And I always look at a certain trait of a team or a characteristic, and it's just the way they're defending. I look at the two Downies, lads. Two Downies today. Like,
just mighty.
They're class. The two of them are class. Like, what a nucleus to have in your defence where you have your three and six brothers. Yeah. Whether it makes a difference to the pitch, I don't know. But the two of them like are operating at such a very, very high level that it's fundamental to Cork's success. So I was just picking out Sami Farrell, who I might say was a very bright spot for Tipperary today. He was funneling forward from midfield. And who was the man that turned him over twice? Was that Rob Downey with him? Just in real physical turnovers. And like you said, Murphy, you could feel the crowd appreciate a genuine effort of defending, right? Yes, the scores are fantastic. Super. And the crowd appreciate that too. But you, everyone, like supporters will appreciate the hard yards, the hard tackles, the turnovers. You know what I mean? Taking the ball off an opposition when it's hard to do. And like Cork, they're just about that at the moment. And I really like where they're at. I like the mentality. And, you know, when a team goes well in that sense and they're showing these characteristics, you're like, you're looking at, well, who's driving it? Is there a particular amount of players? And there's no one person. Everyone on the Cork team, as far as I can see, even Jim Rattilli, the youngest player on the pitch today, comes in and contributes, what, 2 or 3 points? You know what I mean? There's just this kind of collective forward thinking as far as I'm concerned. You know, the defence up along. Patrick Collins was really good today again, I thought. Distribution was excellent. Go through all their backs. No fault. No Mark Corman on the team, mind you. Cormac O'Brien slotted in there. Excellent. Midfield, I think Toomey got 1-3, 1-4. You know, forwards are a nightmare to mark. So when you're looking at, say, who's going to win their Ireland, and you're picking out traits of a team and the positive elements of a team, Cork have it all at the moment. And like, I'm not trying to talk them up because they're up there already. There's no talking up anymore. They are where they are. Now, do they have a tricky game in 2 weeks? Of course they do. Because they're going to have to try and reach the levels that they've reached in the last two games, which has been last three games, which has been very high. 13 goals, you said, Will. Now, there's an expectancy that they have to create goals. Well, if they don't get goals the next day, you know, just challenges will pose themselves. Other opposition teams have been forewarned as to how dangerous Cork are and how physical they are. And yes, they're a bit cynical, but I love that. I love a team saying, you're not going to score on us today in a goal. And I think that's, yes, they've scored 13 goals, but no one has scored in the last three games, Will. Is that right?
No.
So that's a great sign. That's a super sign. Like it was like back in your day, Murphy. If you got in for a goal, you came out hurt. And that's just reality. You know? So you came out hurt. I wasn't saying it's you now, but I'm just saying, like, you have to earn your goal, or you have to do something special to get a goal.
Absolutely.
So I love that trait. Yes, I appreciate the score, and I do, right? But at halftime, did you see the reaction of the Cork crowd?
Yeah.
The whole crowd stood up. It was full of applause, as if to say, this is where we're at. This is what we're all about. This is why we pay money to come here, pack into this ticket or into the stadium, you know, racing for tickets, is to see this kind of exhibition of complete hurling. Total hurling is a phrase I heard used by someone one time. And that's what it was. Defensive and attacking, like, and attitude. Attitude is fantastic. Yeah, so they're favourites, lads.
Yeah. There's a part there, Skettle, when you were saying about the half-time, and it probably ties into what Will was saying as well about an expectation. Like, it's one thing to go out, we'll call it 3 weeks ago, let's say, and down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and to put up that score against Tipperary, not in the league final, with no expectation, let's say, you know. But there's a different thing that the Cork supporters now expect a performance to this standard of the Cork team. And with that comes a bit of a pressure. And I think with the league final today, it was built up to be potentially, you know, a huge, huge game, very close, very tight. And then that whole thing of it's down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, how will these lads react? Maybe a few years ago, there might have been a little bit of weakness, but there was such a clarity about their play. They were so aggressive. They had such conviction that I think that half-time appreciation by the Cork supporters was very much kind of, there was an expectation on you to perform today, and you've actually performed better than what we expected. You're going in at half-time, was it about 14 points up at half-time, 12 points, can't remember, but it was about that.
12, no, it was 12,
and
yeah.
It was 12, and it was a defiant performance, and I think that is something that I haven't seen from this team, where it's like that conviction that we don't really care who's in front of us, we don't care about the expectation. I completely appreciate Dara Fitzgibbon playing it down. That's their job, that's the Cork panel's job, and they will have to do that until this finishes. But for us as outsiders looking in, not in the bubble, you're looking at them going, there's so many boxes you're ticking here that is just All-Ireland winners. You know, like we said, there's a long way to go. We could be talking here after Munster Championship saying the wheels came off the bandwagon. You know, that's the way hurling goes and so on. That's what they have to deal with. But until then, until we see anything different, you're just going, these lads are primed. They're ready to rock, and it's great. It's mighty.
Yeah. Skell Alan Connolly back to form again. That was his first goal since Thurles, tail end of last season in the Munster Championships. Obviously likes scoring goals against Tipperary. He was ill, I think, during the All-Ireland quarterfinal last year. Maybe didn't quite recapture the goal scoring form he had in the league and the Championship last season. But I was, quite aside from hitting the net, I was very impressed by his overall performance today. You know, he ran through the lines. He, again, provides that kind of just turn of pace up front as well. He looked back to good form today, didn't he?
Oh, damn right he did. Like, you know, with the thoughts of Brian Hayes being potentially injured, you were saying, right, who's going to step up to the mark to provide that goal threat, that direct goal threat? And you were kind of laying that on Alan Connolly's shoulders. Then Brian Hayes comes out and is fit to play, but Alan Connolly still carries that mantle. You know, again, extremely important player for that. And I'm very impressed with the way forwards are. And look at this now in future. Look at a game the next day and watch the amount of balls that get delivered into full forward lines and watch the amount of balls that forwards retain. On average, Will, it's 6 out of 10. If a forward retains 6 out of 10 balls, that's a really good return. Really good return. And if you make something happen out of, you know, 80% of that, excellent return. A forward is going to have an excellent day. The Cork forwards are retaining, like, literally, maybe I don't have the exact numbers here, guys, but the Cork forwards are retaining 9 out of 10, 8 out of 10 easily. I don't think I'm wrong in that sense, because
The quality of ball helps though as well. Like there were times when they were really on it today. They're like, they play a lovely ball. Like, it must be fantastic to play in that inside forward line, because you're expected to stay up and you're getting beautiful ball into you.
You are, but I so as part of another item, right, I looked at the Cork forwards against Galway. There's a high behind camera that they had, and there's a side view camera. So both cameras were married them together to watch the play develop outfield. You can look on the left hand side, which is a side behind camera. And to watch the forwards move, when you look on the right-hand side, which is the high behind camera. And to watch the way the forwards move is beautiful, I have to say. Do you know what I mean? As a goalkeeper, you'd be saying, oh, shit, I'm picking the ball out of the net here pretty soon. But their movement is so collective. That's the way I put it, right? It's no one individual moving just to get himself the ball. They're moving in sync, the three of them, which when you've got a forward unit that moves together and they move with an individual purpose, a singular purpose, geez, it's very hard to stop. And then, as you said, Will, When players out the field then are given the opportunity and responsibility to give a good ball in, it comes in nicely. It comes in really nicely. It's a rarity. Maybe once or twice in the game, we'll see the ball pucked in high, just out of pure, I suppose, emergency basis. Let's say every other ball they get is beautifully laid in because the run is so good. You know what I mean? Sometimes you say in the forwards, right, the quality of ball will dictate, you know what I mean, the run of the player. Do you get me? But it's the other way around now. The run of the player to take him where the ball goes. It's fantastic to watch. And someone like Horgan, I haven't seen Horgan this sharp in terms of movement in a while now. Again, I'm open correction here. Like, so watch him get the ball. His movement, there's separation the whole time. And that lad is going to be, what, 37 this year? Maybe he's already?
He is 37.
So you're saying, how could the lad not be out in front of him or beside him or challenge him on the ball? His movement is so you know, professional, really, really sharp, so that every time he makes a move in a jerk, he knows the ball is coming, there's a yard or two, and he's got the option into either shoot or pass. And that's the way it is for them all. But like, to go back to your original question, like, yes, Alan Connolly, of course, he's fantastic, but the delivery they get is one thing, but their ability to retain the ball, jeez. And it's not just the touch work we're talking about, it's off the ball running, how they're able to create space, create separation, then retain the ball, and then make it work. It's top class, lads.
Keep Horgan in your mind for a second, Murph. I just want to think of the cameras. I got to bring up TG Carr and give them a bit of grawl here again. Someone got a little bit fancy in the director's chair today, because multiple times they were using a drone camera, it seemed, behind the goal. It looked really, 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 really good. It was just behind one of the terraces, and they would do this kind of sweeping view that went around. And like you really appreciate for the second game where it was packed. And you just got this great kind of sign of wide colour. And then they had this shallow focus lens, a bit like they've been using in La Liga and in the NFL, which they were using down around Pat Ryan and Liam Cahill. And they used it a few times. You know, there were like sideline pucks happening in the first game particularly. I noticed they got down real close and used that camera as well. Just opened their game again. And still you get to see the wide shots which are behind when, you know, the puckouts were happening during the game as well. I always appreciate that because you get a nice view of space and where players are moving. Yeah. Then they cut back in. There's just that little bit of extra spice, Murph, that kind of, I don't know, I just looked at it and went, wow, this is like a massive step up here.
It was unreal, yeah, and exactly that. Like, I was just watching it, and when it panned to that drone picture in particular, it looked unbelievable. Sure, like the lee behind it there, the stadium, big sunny day, see the crowds coming in. They even did a bit of a, I suppose, what would you call it? A dramatic entrance of the players. Now, I don't know if there's music or anything, but the players were coming in, the buses. I know traditionally that's done on and off, but they kind of do it with a lad with a handy old shoulder camera there. But they had the drone footage kind of following the Cork team in on the bus. There was loads of stuff about that. I was like, they're finer touches. Like, it's not that they're necessary, but it adds to the whole thing. And it kind of adds to, like, even the part they did a minute silence for Mick O'Dwyer, a round of applause. And they just cut. I know that's something they traditionally do as well anyway, but they cut and they had a few words from Mick O'Dwyer and came back. It's not something we often mention on this, but the production quality was class. It was really good. And another one, actually, this is on a separate note, tangent, but there's a good ad on the telly at the moment. I actually can't remember, is it the GA or is it Allianz or is it one of the sponsors that do it? But it's about the Galway footballer who's the first lad from the Aran Islands to play on the Galway football team. But it shows a load of kids on the Aran Islands in a handball alley wearing Kerry jersey, Galway jersey, Leitrim jersey, all this. And they're like kicking points over the handball alley wall and stuff. Brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And I just felt it was like, you know, a kind of, what did we talk about at the start there where it was like the music? It was Sean Oak, sorry. Sean Oak has a, he did a little bit with Sean Oak lately, and it kind of had the old, I suppose, you nearly associated with Michael Collins' music. I think all these things, they really add a cool effect, you know, to a day. You could have showed that match today in one camera up in the stand, and, you know, it does a job. Fantastic. And you can do those extra touches that are really nice. I think the supporters really appreciate it. And the one I really appreciate to finish up is the puck outs from behind the goal. When they go behind the goal and show the puck out from there, I think that's class, because there was one where they did it, and I think it went to, it was either Alan Connolly or someone. I think Alan Connolly got a point. But if they did the flat camera that they normally do in the stand, you would have just seen Alan Connolly get that ball and not know how he lost his player. I think he was meant to be on Ronan Marr at the time, and he lost Ronan Marr. But it started from behind the goal. You saw Patrick Collins. You could see what Patrick Collins could see, and you could see everything happening. And I think for a lot of hurling people, they also enjoy that. So, look, full credit to whoever, I suppose, was in charge of today. It was mighty.
Sorry, Murph.
No, go on. Go on,
that's TG Carr's Ireland final. That's where the equates to. That's their big intercounty coverage over now, right?
I was thinking exactly that. So I was thinking, RTGA Go, RGA Plus, I should say, rebranded. I'm sure we'll do a great job for the rest of the year. And it's good to see that the Joe McDonagh Cup games are going to be on Clubber as well. So there is the potential for people to watch them. But there was part of me going, I really like TG Carr's coverage. Loads of it. Even the fact that like Liam Rush is ready on the pitch just afterwards to do an interview, and then they've got me all done. It's all very slickly put together. Whoever was directing that today was really, really good. Because when a team win a final, it's very difficult if they disappear into the crowd, as many of those Cork players did when there were people looking for autographs or a slitter or whatever after the game, or family members are beside them. You lose the players really quickly. But they had like Rush with Patrick Horgan the minute it finished. And Darragh Fitzgibbon was just standing there. They got him before any of the presentations happened. Because after that, it can be difficult. They go off and lap around the pitch, or they go into the dressing room or wherever else, you won't get them. But that was just ready to go. And I agree with you, Skell. Today was the centrepiece for them. It was their last league final. They're going to have the under 20 championships. They were promoting that massively during their coverage as well. But it's just such a pity that TG Carr disappear for the championship after this. Again, I would love if in the next round of rights that they could say, look, these guys provide mega coverage at the quieter part of the year. Let's give them some of the rights, some extra games. Let them have a piece of the pie for what they do for Gaelic games in this country, and particularly for Ireland coverage. It's bloody great.
I also create a competition around it as well. Like, I mean, any time, let's say, for example, we talk about Munster. Munster's three teams come out of it and two that don't. It's the best provincial championship because there's competition. You're forced to play better. Like, if you transfer that across to, okay, well, here's your few games, and you have TG Cahir and you have RT. Okay, we won't include Clubber that because they don't have the budget. But, like, it's not bashing either of them, but I've never seen TG Cahir do a bad production of anything. Like, they just really do something well, and I'm not even a Gael Gore, and I just love watching the coverage. RT have great stuff as well. They have fantastic stuff. But I do think there's probably a healthy competition piece there that, like, I'm sure there's lads from RT looking on going, geez, that is class, and just appreciate it, and that's good. And I'm sure we'll see it from RTE now as well. But I think they trade off each other nicely there, that it's a case that, geez, the lads who are in charge there today, they got that right. And even just, okay, even introducing new things that we haven't seen before. Like, all that stuff is brilliant for, again, just the production quality of the games. But I'd agree with you, Will. I think, you know, there is a thing of, TG Carr do great stuff, and I think in the spirit of, you know, including them, you know, that not being their last game, let's say, going forward, it somehow to be rectified in a good way would be, I think it would be suitable.
By the way, before we get back on to Patrick Corgan, I have not forgot that. It's still at the back of my mind here. GA Plus put out their fixtures, and again, some attractive hurling fixtures here, such as Tipperary versus Limerick on Sunday, April the 20th is going to be on there in the Munster Senior Hurling Championship. They've also got, I think it's a two Clare games. They've got Clare and Tip on May the 10th. And I think I saw another Clare game there. They've definitely got Waterford and Limerick on the 3rd. So they've picked attractive fixtures. No great surprise, because they want people to sign up and, you know, to pay for a subscription. So they're using the tagline. It's the GA for the GA now at this stage. But despite the fact they've gone to a green and black, GA Plus definitely looks a lot like GA Go to me. Yeah, they've got Clare Tip in the midst of all that as well. They'll also have Kilkenny Dublin in the Leinster Senior Hurling Championship, and they're going to show a fixture from the last round of the Munster Hurling and Leinster Senior Hurling as well on the 25th of May. I did see someone had tweeted back when I put the schedule out. They asked GA Plus, is there the possibility of a hurling season pass? And they said it is something they're looking into.
Good question.
I know Skell have no, like, I had no doubt. Galway footballers are playing as we record this podcast at the moment, and I knew that Skell would not be a bit interested in seeing how they were going to Gaelic Park. So,
well, no, in all fairness, lads, right, if they fly over to New York and can't beat them 10 points, there's something wrong. In fairness, like, look, let's be honest about it. I know they're in New York.
Well, that's good.
I know they're in New York.
But there we go. So potentially, for those people who've asked the question, why can't we have a pass for one sport or the other? They are looking at it at the moment. Now, to pick up on that, Murph, because I didn't forget about Patrick Corgan, because Skell said he's moving better, looking sharper than his has for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So his movement, would you agree that he's moving particularly well at the moment?
Yeah, he looks mighty. He looks so fit and healthy and not bound up by any sort of injuries or niggles, which in particular you'd be thinking of a fella, you know, 37 years of age. But, like, even he got his first point, and it was so smooth how he got the first point. Broke onto the ball, cut back in towards the centre, popped it lovely over the bar. But I think it was the second point from play. It was absolute class. It was out towards the sideline. He came running out towards the 45 and, like, over the shoulder, falling away, hit the ball over the bar. And, like, I just think you don't get that from someone who isn't moving well. And, like, he played, I don't think he was taken off. I might have missed it if he was, but you know, while that game was in the jaws, he was in the middle of it, getting stuck in, breaking left and right. There was no facilitation of Patrick Horgan at any stage, or I haven't seen it in the last while. He's moving seriously well. And to be honest, I don't think Pat Ryan would be playing him out of any sort of tokenship or anything. It would just be a case of you're good enough or you're not. I think he actually really complements the way that it's Alan Colony, Brian Hayes and himself up there. Like, the two boys, I kind of a similar style. You can kind of throw the ball into them anyway whatsoever. They're very dogged. For two forwards who are well capable of scoring, they're very dogged. They turn over the ball, and at the very least, if they can't win it, they hold it up really well for other people to come in. But Patrick Horgan then drifts around. He wins his own ball. He gets out in space, so like the Downies can hit him, or whoever's coming up the field can hit him, Kieran Joyce, they can pop it to him. But when balls are landing in towards Brian Hayes or whoever Alan Colney High wants to put in, you know, have a look at Horgan. He's timing his run, he's losing his man, and he knows, he's smart enough to know where the percentage chance of where that ball is going to break, he's going to be there. And like when you see the ball just breaking to him, you just go, he's going to get this now, he's going to throw a little deaf shimmy and he's going to pop it over the bar, and it's machine-like, you know. So it's mighty to see it, how well he's moving. And it's a credit to himself that he's managed to keep himself in that shape at that age. It's incredible stuff, really.
All right, Scal, talk to me about Tipperary. How do you assess this performance? Because I was in the Liam Cal on Off the Ball just before we recorded, and he was saying today is a bit of a learning experience for them. And he was saying particularly for the younger players, it was a big experience to go out playing Páirc Uí Chaoimh in an atmosphere like that, and he reckons they're going to come back and bounce back when the championship comes around. Give me your overall assessment of Tipperary's performance then.
Oh, it's a tough one. See, it's, looking at the game, you always ask yourself, right, was the winner exceedingly good and was the loser bad, let's say, or was an amalgamation of both? And it wasn't Tipperary bad, would like. They just they weren't as sharp as Cork were. That's very, very simple. So the Cork touch work and the movement and the synchronicity was above Tipperary. That's just fact. You know what I mean? Like when Tipperary got in through on the Cork goals, they were dispossessed. When Cork got through, goals. And it's just like I just think it's a work in progress, really, to be honest. And if I'm Liam Cahill, I'm probably going home looking at some of my younger players, and I'm quite content, to be fair. I'm happy with the way Simon Farrell played, Kennelly played, Stakeling played. I'm happy with the way they added it to it. Brian O'Mara, even, you know, I know he's on the scene for a couple of years, but like defending strong, and defending against a very difficult forward unit. So if you come out with some kind of positivity playing against the Cork forwards at the moment, it's you have to hang on to something positive to go forward. Yes, they're going to play in a couple of weeks back in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, which is seems like now it's a daunting task, but it's not as if Tipperary are now a bad team. No, they're not. They have the nucleus and kind of the fundamental ingredients to make a good team. I just think they need to get it on script more. I find issue with their puck out, to be honest.
Okay.
I think the Cork puck out is a lot more cleaner, you know what I mean, and synchronized, as I said. The Tipperary puck out has probably caused them a small bit of trouble, I think. What I mean with that is the choice of where they go long and when they go short, building out from the back. Like when Tipperary build out from the back, this is me just watching out today, it felt like that they were kind of playing what was in front of them. There was no real set procedure or plan. Do you know what I mean?
Well, the third goal kind of came directly from that as well.
Yeah, which is fair. Look, that happened from time to time, don't get me wrong. But when Cork built out of the back, it felt like, right, if we're going short now, the Cork forwards would move in a certain direction to create space down the line for the likes of a Cormac O'Brien or others to deliver down the line. And then you're heading to grass. Whereas when Tipperary were getting it, they were heading into contact and heading into kind of 50-50 battles. For me, if I was the county manager with Liam Cahill, I'd be saying, I need to focus on our own puck out to see can we maintain primary possession when we have the ball most. The team has the ball most when they have their own puck out. That's just the nature of the game. But everything else above, like even when we look at the forward line retention rate for Tipperary, it wasn't at the same level, unfortunately, as Cork was. So when you have that, you know, one of the stars of the show for Tipperary of late was McCarthy. Didn't have a draw, he's tightly marked now, to be fair. But in terms of ball retention inside, didn't have his best day. Ford got off to a good start, you know what I mean? But unfortunately, the just forwards didn't click. O'Connor didn't click, you know what I mean? Willie Connors didn't click. This kind of thing didn't move well. And it's a work in progress. You know, they're not the finished article overnight, of course not. Well, I know some people were saying that they were one of the favourites to start Ireland. They have work to do, and they know that themselves. But the ingredients are there. All is not lost. The ingredients are certainly there.
Yeah, like, look, here's the thing, Murph. They went 13 points down within the game. They finished out losing by 10. In a way, I don't know how much you put that down to maybe Cork letting the foot off the accelerator a little bit in the second half. But I guess some credit has to go to Tipperary, because when that third goal bangs in, that could have got really messy really quick.
Yeah, it could have. I think, to be honest, there's an element of truth in both. A simple thing is that because Cork were out of sight so early in this game, we kind of always talk about in hurling that there's no score really out of sight, because we've seen games, we go back to think of Tipperary and Limerick a few years ago, where I think Tip were up by 10 points at half time to reel them in. You know, the scenarios were different there, but you really felt Cork were out of sight early, and it just became... I had one or two lads text me that I know from Tip, and they felt it was like nearly like a training session. And that was a Tipperary supporter saying it to me, that they felt it was, even though Tip pulled back a few points, they didn't feel it was kind of, it's an arm wrestle now and they're over, you know, they're beating Cork. I know Liam Cahill said it. I saw the off the ball interview with Stephen Gleeson after the game, and Liam Cahill said, we won the second half. And it's true, they won the second half. But it's kind of it's a little bit clutching, to be honest, because Cork... If they got in any way of a sniff near Cork, I think Cork would have turned it back up again and they would have started going. It was kind of very much Cork were changing, they were getting the subs in, they were moving around, they were popping the ball, they were getting their scores. a course tip. I saw the tip players really, I suppose, looking for something there to maybe ignite the fire and maybe rally again and go get a few scores. And Tip were really trying to do that. To an extent, they achieved it. But I really feel that if you can give them credit for not folding after third goal, absolutely. But it very much felt at that stage that once Cork went in at half time, they were flying it. They came out in the second half, they were all their business, but it was very much about seeing this game out, you know, get more lads on the field and just hurl really well for the second half. And that's what they did. And I don't think it really mattered in the second half if they won by 10, if they won by 8, or if they won by 14. The manner in which they won was the more important thing there. So, look, I'd agree with Skehill. This is not... I wouldn't be cutting the legs from under Tipperary at this stage whatsoever. I'd be interested to see what other teams would have done against Clare or against Cork today, because Cork were just really good. And I think one point we haven't mentioned as well, which I think is kind of important, during the league, when we start, particularly in your February games and March games, early March, let's say, when they're playing in county grounds and the ball is heavy and the ball is wet, it allows for a closer game. We're getting into the territory now. Today was the first best day of the year we could see good weather, ball moving fast. The ground in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, the field promotes fast hurling. And I think what we see then, we spoke about Limerick over the last years. You know what I mean, when you get Limerick to Croke Park, they're dangerous. I think what we saw today is that because... you know, the weather, everything. I'm not saying the weather won it for Cork, but it certainly allowed Cork to play with that freedom where they're snapping the ball around. You're not getting caught in as many rucks. You know, the ball isn't getting stuck in the ground where, like, those things allow a team stay within fighting distance of a really good team. And I genuinely saw today that this is more of what we're going to see from Cork. Like, you know, as the weather gets better and we have sunny days, that possession game that they play where they're snapping balls, it'll all be to hand. It'll all be razor sharp. It'll all be so clinical. And I think, like we were saying with Limerick in the last 5 years, when your game plan is tight, when all the players know what you're doing, and when they're executing it really well, that's only going to benefit Cork going forward, like when Limerick start getting the show up and going here now as well. So I do think today was one of the things where I thought, this is a bit of summer hurling here now. This is, you know, we're starting to see what these lads can really do when they open it up.
Like, Murph, I think now, would you agree with me that we know how Cork play? So their best players, I'd say, in terms of building the ball are between positions 5 and 12. So those 8 players are top class, right? They pull their half-forward line way out, okay? Yep. They either give the ball to them deep or they run through you.
Yeah.
That means then your half-forward line's way out and your half-back line's out. So it creates a monumental amount of space inside your forward line. So now, everyone has this code decrypted. Now, how do you answer the code is the question. Not that simple.
No, it's not.
Simple. Yeah. Like, you're going to have to keep your half-back line deep to cover off their forwards. You do that, their half-forward are going to punish you from distance. We saw Tim O'Mahony, Shane Barrett, bring in Dalton, that's Harnedy. They're going to shoot the lights out from 50 yards. Now what do you do?
Yeah,
you bring out your forwards. Now your forwards are deep.
Are we defenders or
are we attackers? You know what I mean?
What's
your primary function? So I'm my most interesting aspect looking forward to this is how our team is going to counter Cork's game plan. Now, the pitch is expansive. Of course it is. It's a big pitch and it suits the way Cork play. That's why I was saying it's a 5-point head start, you know. But how are they going to get on now when they head into smaller grounds is what I'm really looking forward to.
I want to ask both of you a question which has come in various different forms. I've just gone through the Twitter to see what people have sent us there. And a lot of people asking, you can take it first, Murph. Are Tipperary really better than the Tipperary that we saw in 2024?
That one is... do you know what, actually, I'll say this. Yeah, I do think they are better. I think they're better from the point of view that like, a lot of weight was put on the shoulders of Garrod O'Connor after the league performance he had in 2024. And, you know, that's unfair as well in some ways because he's a young player coming in. He has another year under his belt now. You know, like, they had injuries last year as well. They kind of had a very much of a transition phase, but they seem to embed in more players like Darren McCarthy, again, Sam O'Farrell. These lads have really come in and made an impact. Mickey Breen, who had moved around a lot, is at cornerback now, and they seem to be getting really the best hurling out of him there because the type of game that they're playing, he does kind of drift up the field anyway. But they have a nice rhythm. Like, Willie Connors is back in, hurled really well midfield for the league. Alan Tynan, a man who's been half back and half forward, he again has had a really good league. I do think they're better, to be honest, if I'm to pick yes or no. But the thing is about it is, are they good enough now to go and sustain a Munster Championship? That's really the question. They are in a better place, but we see how competitive Munster is. Is the level that Tipperary has gotten to now will that carry him through Munster? And I think that's the real question. I do think they're a better team. I do think they're playing a better brand of hurling. I think they're playing with more confidence. And when I say
looking to lead you here, but you are talking yourself into a situation where you're about to say Tipperary aren't getting out of the group.
We were asked two or three weeks ago, and I think I said Cork, Clare, and Limerick. Anyway, at the moment, I would say I don't think they are going to get out because. And again, I know you'll tell us, Will, when we're doing our Munster Championship predictions. I'm sure you'll save it for a quieter week.
A couple of weeks' time, but why not take the question now, based on what you've seen in the league?
I've said it there. At the moment, for me, it's hard to look past. And I know people will say Clare got relegated, but I have to give Clare credit in terms of they're all Ireland champions. What are you laughing at, Skell?
I'm just saying, I did this. You walked straight to that one.
It was always coming.
You actually talked yourself into it.
I did. Yeah, no, I'll take the rap for that one there. It was a sunny day. I've been out in the sun all day. I'm walking myself into things here.
I saw you playing. Yeah. Did you see me a while ago?
Oh, yeah, that was on TG Carr. Yeah. That was a few years ago.
I have to ask you. I know it's probably the wrong time. The run you did with the Kenyan runners.
It was very good. So they offered us, there's three distances. I think it was, if I'm correct in saying, there was a 1K you could do. By the way, we were at altitude. This is where the Kenyan, I know they have a few places around Kenya.
This is where marathon winners are made.
There was lads coming in who were like, oh, I won the world championships here. I was gold in that in Olympics. There was lads everywhere. And, they gave us an option of 1K, 3K, or 6K. I think it was something like that. And sure, everybody then being pure competitive, I'll do the 6K. By the way, lads, you're at altitude, and these lads are Kenyan runners. So you had Tom Morrissey, who's about 94, 95 kg, running beside a Kenyan fella who's about 50 kg and does this his whole life. And lads are like, too proud. So I remember with that, I did the 6K. I was running, I was talking to Neil McManus for a bit, and I was talking to Paddy Burke as well of Antrim. And I remember after a while, the three of us were like, do you mind if we stop talking here? Because it feels like I'm breathing through a straw. I can't actually get my breath here, don't. But what was gas about it was we went off and we did a big lap, 6K, came back. And so what it is as well is Kenyan runners go running at dawn. That's part of, their routine or something, to do a morning run. So it was like the sun was rising. You're in Kenya, the red earth. It was class now. It was unreal. We came back then and we were chatting to a few of the runners. And there was one guy coming out. Can't remember his name. And we were chatting to him. And I was like, what type of running do you do? Myself, Sean Finn, I think Alton Harney or Roscommon were talking to him. What kind of running do you do? What's your distance? And he goes, marathon. I'm like, Jesus, right. You must be good. So what's your training like here? He goes, I alternate. I alternate between 10K and 20Ks. I was like, go away. So you do 10K today, 20K tomorrow. He goes, no, I'm going to do 10K now. I'll do 20K in the afternoon. So we just turned around, right? We're going for breakfast there, bud. Good luck.
30K in the one day.
But he looked at me confused. No, I'm going to do 10K now to warm up. I'll come back then. I'll have my breakfast. I'll do a bit of stretching. They do the Sutter Yoke then as well, where they brought us down. And they do a lot of rhythmic stuff where they set up this little kind of little route where it's there's little ropes and things, and they'll bounce in and out of it, and it's very they're dancing more than it's a kind of a lad sprinting through ladders. It's not like that. And they do a session there, they'll all come together and there'll be about 20 of them, and they're bouncing in and out, really rudimental stuff, no fancy gear. That stuff was mighty. I know we're going to complete tangent.
The program was a very good program, I have to say.
Well, the whole thing is brilliant. Alan Kearns does it, and I know it's probably a thing we can do dedicate a part of a bonus pod too, but he's done three of those trips now, and we were the first lads to kind of do it and kind of ventured into it, going not really knowing what we're going to do, despite the fact Alan Kearns has been huge in all these things and had really successful trips. But it's very humbling, the places you go to, and it's just the small amount of stuff there. You figure out the healthcare systems and different things in rural Kenya in particular, and then just the simple things like people trying to just live off the land and different things. It's so tough with the climate that's there. So the whole time we had a great experience, and it was mighty mixing with different players and different things. But I think the whole lot of us came back kind of going, Jesus, we don't have it hard at all, so it was class. And I think the documentary, in fairness, again, TG Carter and Brian Tyres were with us on it. They covered it really well, and really, I think, hit the note of it as well. But
You've also made it very difficult for the Premier View podcast to cut both of you here, where you've both predicted the Tipperary aren't going to get out of the group, because I assume, Skell, you're about to say they're not getting out either.
Well, so you, but hold on. Your question was originally, are Tipperary a better team than last year?
Well, take that one
first. So last year, they were beaten by Limerick by 14 points. They were beaten by Cork by 18 points, which was. So their first two fixtures are a repeat of what that was last year. So will the gap be the same, those two fixtures? I'm going to have to say no. Excuse me. I don't think the gap will be that much. What the hell? So I don't think the gap will be that much. Are they better teams?
That's the cyanide from the Premier Podcast now or something. Get it?
Coming through, yeah.
put it into his my waddy. But anyway,
yeah.
Might I say that my waddy is terrible, whatever flavour she chose this week. But nonetheless, I can't give out too much. She's the boss. Tipperary better team. They are a better team. Well, let's be frank about it. Yeah, they've introduced players. Okay, that are, yes, they're young, right? But they're young and effective. So I'm thinking that they're better. How much better are they? Like, will they take Cork and Munster? The answer for me is no at the moment. Will they take Limerick? I genuinely don't know this. Like, Limerick are kind of a bit of a conundrum at the moment for me. I'm not sure where they stand. We knew where they stood last year. Mm. So that's why I'm pointing towards them. Like, where they stand, I don't know. Will there be a 14-point gap? I'm going to have to say no. But that's the first two fixtures. And then, like, if you lose them to fixtures, they're out. Mm. You know, it's that kind of simple. So they're a better team for sure. Better league team, obviously. Are they a better championship team? Remains to be seen, but I'm going to say they are.
Yeah, and like even for me in that prediction of saying like I'm going Clare, Cork and Limerick, I think at the moment I don't think anyone's going to argue from what we've seen of Cork and Limerick automatically. And some people might go, why are you going with Clare? Last year when we did the All-Ireland final, me and you, Will, went with Clare, and I think, Skell, you went with Cork. And I think me and you, Will, kind of went, there's just something about Clare that I feel their confidence and belief is in a place where they go, okay, yeah, we may have sustained this over the last while, but we do have a really good team. And they have those creative players. Okay, Shane O'Donnell looks like we're not going to see him for Munster. But I'm kind of giving Clare the benefit of the doubt in this, and that they've disappeared now after, right, they've gone off, they're relegated, but they're now recuperating. And I think they're going to come back and find their way out of Munster. Mm-hmm. But the thing is about it, any of the listeners who are listening, I'm sure loads of lads have their own tree and they're saying, well, what about Waterford? For me, let's say even talk about Waterford, you know, great league final today, looked really well. The only reason, and I would say this about any Munster team who plays in 1B, it's very hard to say that you've seen enough of that team to say that you can see them coming out of Munster when you're playing in 1B. Like all the other Munster teams, we've seen them in 1A. We've seen them, you know, be tested against even, you know, Galway and Kilkenny and all that as well outside of Munster. So for me with Waterford, they're looking good. You know, they've tied the Burka back, and, you know, Austin Gleeson's obviously back in the mix and everything. It's looking great. But if you're picking these things on the balance of what you've seen, I'm going with Limerick because I know who Limerick are, Cork because we've seen what Cork are, and then it's a toss-up. Then you're kind of going Clare, Tipperary, Waterford. Waterford I haven't seen enough of, and in between Tipperary and Clare, I'm just going to go, you know what, I think Clare are going to get back on the bandwagon here and get moving again. And like we said, Tipperary do have a tough start, so it's not that they're, as we said, they are a better team than last year, but what we've seen in Munster is that you can be a really good team and not get out of Munster.
Yeah, no, for sure. When I look at Clare's fixtures here, again, it's a cliche to say you have to hit the ground running, but from their perspective, right, they've got Cork at home, first round. They need a much improved performance than what we saw before. They go to Waterford before their break, and then they play Tipperary at home. Crucially, I think they have to have a couple of wins at that point if they're going to qualify. You don't want to be in a situation where you have to go to Limerick in the last round looking for a result where Limerick could well need something at home in that fixture as well. So,
but you, like, hypothetically, Will, like you've said it there, for example, so let's take Clare as an example. So Clare go to Cork, let's say Clare potentially lose Cork, because you can kind of pick a pattern.
Clare Cork at home,
sorry, the Clare Cork at home, sorry, yeah, so Clare of Cork at home, and let's say we'll go, I'll probably predict at that stage that Cork will beat Clare because, you know, what we've seen from two teams, Cork will beat Clare. And even if Cork lose that one, Cork go to Waterford then, isn't it, or Clare go to Waterford then?
They do.
Clare go to Waterford, Clare could get a result there. They then get a break, and Tipperary have now come through Limerick and Cork, correct in saying that?
Yeah.
Like, that's a tough one. And now two teams, and that's the thing about week on week, and the I suppose, the journey that is the Munster Championship. They potentially then go and face a Tipperary team. You might have it in front of you, Will. Is it in Thurles or Ennis?
I think that game is at home, Ennis for Clare.
Okay, so technically then you could have a Clare team at home against Tipperary, who are now off the back of two losses, really need a win. It'll be a dangerous game, but Clare might have gotten a win. That's just one scenario. In Waterford, they may have gotten a win. So some of these things, you know, that you need, you kind of need that little bit of the journey you have or the patch you have in front of you. might assist you in doing it. Now, again, I'm only, all that could forswear the night could fall to shite. That mightn't pan out that way at all. But I'm just saying that, you know, the way, if you look back at the roots of other teams over the last few years, you know, sometimes the timing of these matches can be crucial. And even that break week as well, to give you a little bit of time to take stock for the next match. You know, that's hypothetically a path teams could take.
Yeah, okay. Before we get off that, Skell, do you see them coming out, Tipperary?
I just have to say, Murph, I appreciate you forewarning the listeners about your swear.
Well, as Will said at the start,
it's very gentlemanlike, I have to say. Very gentlemanlike.
Yeah. I might swear a little bit later on. I have a little story about Leitrim Hurlers. We played them today, but I might save that for later on, my second swear word.
We won't draw that out, so okay.
No, yeah.
Someone's going to get it, I think. Or the ref. I'm not sure which it is.
No.
By the way, Murph, he's avoiding terribly here. He's just gone, yeah, you were going to swear. Yeah, I'm not going to actually say it's going
to
happen.
And he went on to the referee then, but right, Skell, it's like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire now. The spotlight is on you here.
Did.
I hate this question. Of all the questions I get, I hate this one the most.
You were sneering at me there.
I was
4 minutes ago.
I was, but Jesus, I was nearly laughing inside, saying that he's. I'm going to memorize. I wrote it down. They're like, oh, Jesus. You see, Clare are sometimes a bit of an enigma. I don't know how to. Murph, I'm trying to describe this right, but if I was to entrust a team to shut down another team, right, and to bring it to a mental place that, like, you think other teams are incapable of, I would pick Clare.
Hold on a second here. But Clare aren't an enigma when it comes to the group stages in Munster. Their record in group stages is incredible.
It is incredible. But come on, where they stand right now, okay?
Okay.
Where they don't have full availability, that was a bit of a tongue twister.
Availability.
of their players, right? As well as probably not the best run in, to be fair. Not the best run in, you could say. But still something in the back of my mind says, if there's a team that can do it and put it out of the fire, you nearly put them on the same level as Limerick for pulling a specific match out of the fire. Like, they were playing games against Limerick over the last number of years when you think they have no right to be within, to contest them, particularly the one where they got beaten by Tipperary in the first round a couple of years ago, and they went on and bet Limerick in the playground.
Yeah.
That one, for me, just sticks out in my mind as to how they produced that. The day John Conlon's brother got married and got man the match, how they produced that when things were kind of going against them. Now, fast forward to the present day, and they're saying, right, they're not in the best position, but they just seem to embody their manager in this kind of resilience and say, right, whoever's in front of us, let's just beat them. So that's what's twisted me. You know what I mean? I know Tipperary have had a really good league campaign. Really good. Really positive. But I can't look past Clare. And these are Ireland champions, don't get me wrong, but I can't look past them. You'd say there's no form. Grant, and we're always saying we're evidence-based approach, but the evidence goes back, not just 6 weeks ago, it goes back to 3 or 4 years. So it's Clare, it's Cork, it's Limerick. Not in that order, no. Hold on a second. Not in that order.
The three are going to qualify, though.
Don't make me go flipping call. It's the final now. But
don't worry. 2 weeks time, I'm going to have to do some details, so don't worry.
There's another thing that you don't mention. Like, I think the whole Shane O'Donnell thing, yes, it's a big loss to Clare, and we'll see if he arrives in magically at some stage of championship. But you have to remember as well, you have Ryan Taylor, you have Aaron Shanahan, you have Peter Duggan, you have Ian Galvin, Tony Kelly. Like, yes, Shane O'Donnell is the most creative forward out of them in terms of creating something from nothing. But like David Fitzgerald, like they've so many good players Rogers, there that in
Rogers
terms of
McCarthy, yeah.
Yeah, like if you go forward 5 years, for example, and we're sitting here talking about Tipperary, you could be talking about, well, look, geez, they've Darren McCarthy, they've Jake Morris, they've whereas Clare lads might have retired. At the moment, yeah, I think you have to give respect to the Clare forwards in particular that are there because they've been at this level for a little bit longer and they've been tried and tested. And I think that's, for me, where it's just tipping the scales. That, okay, Shane O'Donnell's gone, but they have enough lads there to account for that.
Yeah. Here's a dirty question for you, Skell, before we move on to the 1B final. This came in from John S. on Spotify. Will, can you please ask Mr. Skell how he felt about diving after Davy Glennon's theatrics for the equalising score in the 2012 drawn All-Ireland final? I'm sure he wasn't calling out his teammate as a cheat and wouldn't care if they'd won the replay. I absolutely hate diving, but it can't be okay if it's one of my teammates or county men doing it. Good for the goose, good for the gander. Go on. Davy Glennon, 2012.
I say you weren't expecting that.
I was not expecting that. Were you casting back 14 years ago?
Yeah.
What do you want me to do? To condemn my teammate, is it?
I think so, does want you to. I think that's.
I think he literally wants you to retrospectively.
He literally wants you.
So these are the facts, right? These are the facts. Davy Glennon picks up the ball. He gets tackled by Jackie. He dives. The referee gets fooled and awards a free. That's it. He He dived. Absolutely, he dived, 100%. Did anyone get sent off? Did he fake an injury? No.
I think John S. Is it John S. wants you to say it in more pain. And I think he didn't. I don't think he expected you to be that straight up about
that direct.
He doesn't know
if he's listening. If he's listening to the podcast by now, he knows I'm black or white. Very simple. The question is, did David dive? Yes, he dived, 100%. Did he fool the ref? Yes, he fooled the ref. Okay. Did we gain from it? Was that the free we're getting put over?
He did.
Yeah, it was.
Okay. Yeah, we obviously gained from it, say, right? Do I condemn him?
We gained from it as well. We went to Jamaica off the back of it. So
I condemn him to death.
Okay. Now, by the way, in fairness to Skell, the minute I saw that, and I said I'd keep it out of the Spotify comments because it was particularly spicy, was that only a few weeks ago, Skell completely called out Conor Cooney for the foul on Mike Casey.
Yeah,
didn't dance around it. He didn't go, oh no, 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 he's a good guy and you know this is out of character wherever you went. No, no, that should have been a red card.
Like this fact, so if I have something in my mind, right, even if he's a friend or an ex teammate, right, I'm not going to go over rubbing his back, making him feel like he's heroic. I'm going to tell him exactly what's in my head, right? Not to make his feelings any better. So the Conor Cooney incident, 100% he was wrong, should have been red carded. What more do you want me to say? That he deserves 50 lashes across the arse? Like, what is it like?
Well, why not? You might as well say that. Sure,
that he should be 2 years suspended. Yeah, he should never hurl again. What do you want me to say?
Jesus. Yeah, some lads just want more. They want more. Yeah.
Some lads are convinced that you're biased without being biased. I was like, I said to you last week, on it may well be on the member spot. Somebody tweeted me like 3-4 times, going, "You have to call out that Brian Dygan should have been sent off because you were complaining that James Mann was incorrectly sent off." Like sent and put it under like unrelated tweets as well. Apparently going here, like you've assumed a bias and I'm trying to protect somebody here. It's not. And I literally replied and went, look, that hit was dangerous. That hit was high. Probably should have been a red card.
But that's where it goes back to, like as we were saying recently, Will, the week before last, I think it was, in terms of social media, these people have born confidence out of it where they think they can debate people, but it's just levels of extremism. They go, oh, so the complete far side thinking you're the bollocks, that's completely biased for your own team, and then you're going to say anthem to defend them. Well, it's not. Actually, it's the contrary. We're going to tell the truth. That's all it is, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so for example, like, you know, Murph, we talked about, I mentioned, who did I mention, which was the player, Keane Kinney.
Yeah.
I said that he went down soft. You said, yeah, he did, 100%.
Because yeah, I think the lads weren't happy though that I didn't lean into it a bit more. I can't remember that time, but you said it. And I think what we spoke about afterwards was lads got on to me about that I didn't say it then after you, or maybe I don't know that I
didn't. It wasn't that you didn't say it, it was like you didn't say it forcefully enough.
Okay, that's what it was. But like it was, like, you know, it was. And I think whether you're talking about the Cork one in Páirc Uí, where he could have got sent off with Kieran Joyce, or the Alan Tynan one. Yeah, of course it was, like, you know, but yeah. I think the three of us have been caught by that over the last week. We're like, you didn't come out and write it down and stamp your name on it, like, you know. But I think that night for that one, you said it and I agreed with you, but it wasn't seen as being enough or something. So look, we're not going to say things three times on the podcast.
No. Come back to me.
And we're not going to
answer your fucking question sufficiently.
I think we were all guilty those 2 weeks as well of where the three of us in the group were watching the games in question. We were like, do any of us disagree that was a red card or that was a flop to the ground or whatever else? Mm. And like, none of us were really disagreeing with it. By all means, if we all have different thoughts on it, let's meander off into that conversation. But I thought we called out the diving and we called out the high hits each time. Anyway, the 1B final then. This is one where, like, Waterford won pulling up. But bizarrely enough, and I said it earlier, as an Offaly supporter, last 15 minutes were actually quite encouraging. They outscored Waterford by 110 to 2 points, I think, after Oisin Kelly's second goal, and played a totally different style and really put the push onto Waterford. That's it. And I appreciate that their intensity had dropped, but it was a better way to lose a game. To go down 127 to 220, than at times when Waterford were like 15 points up, it looked like this was going to really, 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 really get bad. Skell, you mentioned it already, and I'm not going to Murph first for a reason, and we'll explain why in a second. But Waterford ran off, I think it was 8 of the first 9 scores in the game. As you say, they were getting space, they were creating space. You kind of got the feeling at that stage there was a bit of a gap between the two teams.
Yeah, there was. And in fairness, like, and it was the gap around the middle, Will, to be fair. Like, and even when the opportunities arose for the forward units, like, Waterford were taking them, but they weren't under as much duress or pressure as the Offaly forwards were. But I still, like, in the same breath, I can picture Brian Dygan had 3 opportunities. Like, you know, Dan Raven had 1, Dan Bourke had 2, you know, Charlie Mitchell had 1, whereby you're saying in the first half against the conditions, if you can slot 50% of them, including the goal chance, like, geez, you're not in a terrible spot. But the thing is, Waterford got the ball in space, not under too much pressure. And the thing is, as well, the deliveries that came from the Waterford midfield and backs, they weren't under pressure. So they were able to place the ball into a perfect position for an oncoming Waterford forward. And some of the scores from Waterford got, let's say, particularly Curran's one, like where you've got Mark Fitzgerald coming up with number three on his back, gets to the 70-yard line, hands it to Curran, and then supporting Curran, I think, geez, this is very go-forward attitude from Waterford. That just was typified throughout them for the day, I think, to be fair. And they did it both ways. When Waterford dropped off in the kind of the second quarter, the second half of the first half, if that makes sense, Waterford started shooting from distance in. So they had a kind of copped from both sides. So it's just the Waterford were slicker. Like, and you have them days where teams are very slick and their touch work is slick and they're on the breaks quickly and the forwards are moving with energy and the ball is going over the bar. And that's just the way it was in the first half. And to be fair, I will say, come 55 minutes, Offaly did put in a very good accord. And I did think Dygan should have had a penalty. I thought his hurl was carried. Yeah, was
his twice. Hurl gets played, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's a penalty. Look, that's just reality. It's a penalty. Would that have swayed the game? No, it wouldn't. But there was a small bit of a groove for Offaly at the time. You know, if they got another goal there after rushing Kalis too, you're thinking, geez, the landscape could be way different here. But they kept thundering forward. And they did to Waterford to them in that purple patch period. Now, you can say Waterford took the intensity levels down a bit because with the nature of the scoreboard. But Offaly were winning primary possession in the half-back line. They were winning the breaks in the midfield. They were going forward from the half-forward line up, and they were running at Waterford. And that's what let's say, was typical of a Waterford performance in the first half. Offaly kind of matched that in the second half, but it was just a little bit too late, too late. And when the gap closed to 4 points, I still feel like Offaly had an opportunity or two. If they kept playing the same system as that, like they're running through the half-forward line, I think they could have, I won't say snuck the game, but they could definitely get the margin down sooner.
They reverted to the diagonal ball in long every single time then. And while like Dignan was getting a bit of change, and sometimes Ushin Kelly was as well, they started to play far too many balls that were on the right percentage side of the defender at that stage. Mm-hmm. While when they were chipping away, it was actually all about moving the ball around and getting into a good shooting position. It was almost like they decided another goal is the only way to cut this 4 points, so we're going to go long every time.
Well, how much opportunity came from Offaly by Dan Burke coming to the middle?
Loads, yeah.
Dan Burke was picking up ball, let's say, in his own 65, running hard, and he was providing opportunities. Like some of the passes, like the pass to Ushin Kelly, Jesus, brilliant for the goal. Do you mean? And the pace he was attacking from, it's very hard to nullify an attack when you've got a centre forward with that pace coming through the middle. You know what I mean? It just creates open opportunity. Whereby if you hit in, like some of them balls Offaly hit in the last 6 minutes, I'd say, they were kind of, you know, 50-50 balls, so the opportunity wasn't there for Offaly, to be fair.
Less than 50-50. But Waterford were more than happy at that point to defend in that way. Yeah. Because you can go back, and even if Dignan broke the ball, Waterford were happy enough to sweep up the second ball. And there was a couple of times when they, you know, cut out passes that were just a little bit overly ambitious. Yeah. I think if Offaly kept chipping away, they could have maybe got that down to a couple of points. And the next thing, you start to kind of create a bit of nervous energy, but didn't happen.
Yeah, and then the same breath in this year, only for Troy, like with Desi at the end, it could have been another write-off. So, like if you're looking for positives, first of all, promotion for Offaly is a huge positive. I don't think an awful lot of the media, national media, and including myself, I have to admit, would have said that Offaly would get promoted this year of the league. That's a huge positive. Heading into an Leinster Championship now with a pep in their step, and that's Offaly's first real taste for that group, you could say, of Championship pace hurling. I know they played the league last year, okay? But like as Murph was alluding to earlier on, in terms of the pitch, the surface, you know, the sunlight, etc., a very nice day. That was a Championship pace today that Offaly are going to have to take an awful lot of learnings from. So if you're looking for positives, look that they got exposed, and a lot of the younger players got exposed to what it's like to play a top-level pace game. So heading into their Leinster Championship, they've got, you know, a pre-rehearsal under the belt. So again, it's a positive, huge positive league campaign for them.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with Stephen Bennett afterwards. He was saying like there is that possibility that Offaly will, you know, rock a team or two during the Leinster Championship. Question about Paddy Levy as well. Declan Horan, should he be brought as sanctioned for bringing the game into dispute for the way he carries his hurley around? I'm guessing that's again back to the
he literally carries it with the tape of the hurlers.
Yeah, strange, isn't it?
Like he carries it so far up, the hands cut him someday.
Yeah, he was doing the unusual passing style again. The only thing is, they don't tend to fall.
Yeah.
I remember, was it Podging was talking about that last year? He was saying, it looks weird, but it's not ineffective if the pass continues to get to a teammate.
Look, it's like Taggy Fogarty used to swap the hands and Wally Walsh, and you're saying, what's he at there? But by Jesus, were they effective?
That was part two of Declan's question. His first part, Skell, you can take this, and Murph, I'll bring you in a second, because I want to talk about why Murph wasn't watching the first half of the 1B final. So Declan says, are Offaly going to learn anything from being hammered week on week next year in 1A? Because they will be. Are they better off in 1B with a test against Clare and a lesser one against Wexford and then a few confidence builders against 1B teams? What do you think about that for a second? I I don't really subscribe to that. No. Because what's the point in trying to improve your lot if it's just to stay at that level forevermore? Like, if that means they're playing 1B teams and getting a morale booster and whatever else, they're never exposed to the top level. And you'll only ever get a game against two, maybe three good teams within there if you want to go beyond the level that they're hoping that they're at the moment. Well, next year, yeah, they might take a few scutcheons. They might not. Last time they were in 1A, probably should have beaten Clare. Last time they were in 1A, they played well away to Kilkenny. I don't take it as a complete inevitability that they're going to get hammered in all the games.
Well, look at the group players they have at the moment. So next year, will they be contending with an under-20 championship in their way? No, they won't.
Not as many players,
The vast majority of the players, I say. I mean this respectfully, the senior quality players in the under-20 squad will be playing with the seniors. They'll be gone out with the under-20s. Will they be contending with Fitzgibbon? Potentially, yeah. But they'll have their full complement to deal with, I think. Where will they be at then in terms of next year? They'll be better on. They'll have a Leinster championship under the belt. How are they going to go in this year's championship remains to be seen. They're going to come up against big teams that are going to be, again, as I said, forewarned as to what offer you're going to bring. So I reject that. Appreciate the question, but I reject the foundation of it. You know, you're judging Offaly on where they were last year or the year previous as to where they can potentially get to. So the team like Offaly, who is continuously improving and come up through the ranks and tasked with coming out of Division 1B and successfully, you know, achieved that, deserve their shot in 1A, regardless of what people think, regardless of opinion, you know, and like we'll judge them rightfully next year. But as Murph said recently, the league has its own challenges, right? And that the pace of the game, let's say, you know, it won't be 100 miles an hour. So I'm saying 1A mightn't be the cauldron that Offaly might think, or people might think it is at the moment, you know? So like if we're at about teams, we want teams to improve. We want the teams who were the heroes of yesteryear, like Offaly in the mid 90s. We want them to get back to where they were. Like you have to give them opportunity, you know, and respect their efforts to get there, straight up. Like, no, they weren't handed anything, so I don't believe they're going to get killed next year. I think they're going to be challenged, of course, there, and they might get a hammer or one or two, they might, but, like, they have to, iron sharpens iron, is my opinion, you know, so if you're there, you have to either fucking shit or get off the pot, I'm afraid, so, but they deserve the opportunity to be there, simple as that.
Yeah, and look, again, I appreciate that tweet probably came in the first half of the game today, when it was particularly messy looking. Still scored 220 by the end of that 1B final, despite, you know, not playing particularly well throughout most of it. The good thing for you, Murph, you put Brian Dighton into your team of the league last week.
Yeah.
Played really well today. Scored 12 points. Probably could have scored a bit more. Decent save from Billy Nolan in the first half. Could have had a penalty.
Bad shot.
But, yeah.
Let's just get it straight.
Needs to go across the goalkeeper, didn't he?
Needs to go on the deck.
Yeah.
On the ground. That's where he put the ball.
Give the goalkeeper a chance to put it in their region.
I keep saying it. They won't listen.
Yeah. Look, maybe listen to the pod. It seems everyone listens to the pod, Murph, because you came up against a pod listener earlier today. What were you up to?
We were playing Leitrim today with the club. There's Mike Wall, who manages Leitrim. He's involved in our club as well. So he's up there managing. So they're looking for, I suppose, a neutral enough game for them getting prepped for their championship. And we play them up in Kilcock and Kildare. But I should look, there's just lads everywhere. Like, I mean, anywhere you are, lads are just... there's lads falling out of the woodwork, who just say it to you. Like, I was donating blood there last month, 2 months ago. And the man who's taking the blood off me from Carlow, I can't think of it. I think it was James, I think it was.
Do you get paid for that? No.
No, I don't get paid. You
don't even get a pint of Guinness anymore, I don't.
You don't get paid. Jesus. Well, it'd be actually dangerous to be paying lads. To be lads down to a half pint of blood in their body. But anyway, I'm getting off. I don't want to get off point here. No, I didn't get paid to give me blood, Skell. But like lads just kind of like say it to you anywhere. But anyway, we're playing Leitrim. And ball came in. Myself and one of the Leitrim lads were running out to get the ball. I think it was Joe Murray, I think it was, running out to get the ball. I blocked it out over the sideline and he stood on my ankle, stood on my heel as it was going out. And it was like, it was an honest mistake, like, you know, and sure, I was kind of holding the calf going out towards the sideline. I didn't even look up. The lad holding the water over the sideline, he was like, "Are you all right?" And I was like, "Ah, jeez, yeah, no, it's grand, it's grand." "Oh, you'll be telling Skittle about that one later on." I was like, "For fuck's sake." I was like, "It's the middle of a match." And, but I wouldn't mind. This is where I was going to say the second time I was going to curse there today. Second half, anyway. Like, their movement was really good. Actually, just to give a mention to the Leitrim hurler, I spoke to him afterwards. Their movement was really good. Like, it was one of those things, do you know when you're watching a match? But I suppose in particular, when you're actually marking a fella, you see someone coming in and you know by their movement before the ball's even thrown in, you're like, okay, this fella knows what he's about. That's the impression we got off the Leitrim boys, particularly the forward. So they were good now, in fairness. And we spoke about a few other things afterwards, but In the second half, there was a little break in play. I think someone got a knock. And they have a 19-year-old corner forward, Conor McLaughlin, was corner forward. And we were chatting away for about a minute. He buttered me up. I should have seen it coming. Buttered me up to the last. And the ball comes back into play. He bolts away from me. I'm caught in no man's land. Lad pops him a ball. He sticks it over the bar. And he turns around to me and starts going like that, like fist up in the face. There, I was like, you little fucking bollocks, yeah. And he went off and he skipped into the corner. I was going, you fuck, Jesus Christ. Slicy. And yeah, so I was laughing anyway. But sure, we got a good little crack out of it. But it was actually the last point then on that. Came into the dressing room today. It was actually kind of a mix of our junior Bs and intermediates. And but lads were calling it like that it was our junior B team or whatever, because it was probably predominantly junior Bs. But a few of the younger lads on the panel were like asking, when was the last time I played junior B? And I was like, Jesus. I said, do you want to know my age or the year that I did it? And they were like, oh, sure, what year was it? And I said, 2004. And sure, we figured out the goalkeeper, I don't think, was born. The right cornerback, I was playing fullback. Right cornerback wasn't born. Left cornerback wasn't born. The right halfback may have been born. Left halfback wasn't born. I was like, Jesus, that's a fair stat now that I'm. Yeah, that's when you know it's like there's a few markers, but then I was like, okay, right.
Yeah. Right,
these lads were not born. And if anything, we're not even speaking at that stage. They were infants. But
we have lads that didn't know what extra vision was.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Not extra vision.
Like, I mean, they haven't lived. Look, nowadays they can just download everything, stream everything. Yeah. They don't know what it's like to go down and hand your fiver over and have to pay a fine
after you rewind it.
I'm name checking Donald Mannion. He didn't know what a DVD was.
What?
Yeah, like, I'm thinking that lad's playing the piss out of me, but then we got into extra vision. What's extra vision? Genuinely, bewilderment as to what extra vision was.
Jesus, I remember going in and like, there used to be a thing where on the television, Extra Vision would have the ad to tell you what they have in now this week. Yeah. Like, oh, we have The World Is Not Enough, James Bond.
And then you'd be out and like, it'd be gone. Like, you say, put my name on that, call me when it gets in.
Yeah, call me when it gets in. Yeah, you're renting it for one night or two nights. One night would be about $3.99, two nights would be $5.99 to take a euro off you. Sure, was it even euro at the time? The euro was just it. It's,
I remember the challenge as well, where there was at one point you could rent, I think, three for the weekend for like £9 or something like that. And you had to make sure you watched all three.
Yeah.
And it's a great excuse to have to get up early on a Sunday morning because you weren't, I'm not going to watch the third one.
Do you know what? I'm going to really throw a real haymaker into it here. I remember, I'm going to go back as far as 95, 96, there used to be a place in town. There's actually a chipper there now, great chipper. And I remember you used to go in to rent like a Nintendo 64. Oh, or wow. Rent, yeah, there used to be a thing where you could rent one of them, two games, two controllers, and have it for a few days. And that was kind of a popular thing. Before PlayStation came in, everyone just didn't get a PlayStation or get a Nintendo 64. But Extra Vision, you could rent them, and you could do different things like that. So I remember going in, getting GoldenEye for the Nintendo 64, renting it for a few days, few controllers, and like living in your room. You were pale coming out after about 3 days.
He's bloodshot.
Bloodshot.
Haven't eaten in 3 days.
Yeah. Not eaten nothing.
No, literally one of the best games of all time. The only problem is if you do find your old N64 and have a look back, it's a lot slower than you remember it. But it was still great. I'd love to get a remastered version of it now. Just don't mess about it. Just,
I think you can get all that because you often see lads putting in like these things that you plug into your telly and you can get all these games on it. So if there's like it's you're so sophisticated now. But it'd be class. Yeah. That and like old Mario Kart or something. That'd be unbelievable. Street Fighter.
I used to love my N64. There you go. Yeah. Right.
Tekken.
Tekken was great. Tekken was on your PS1, which is...
This is my guy with the sword. Hacking them. Just hacking them.
I think I saw someone put up the other day, which will really make us feel old before we finish this main pod. It was something like the PlayStation 1, the original PlayStation, came out closer to 1970 than where we are now.
Shut up.
Sorry about that.
That's like the one, what is it? Cleopatra was born closer to the invention of the iPhone than she was the pyramids. That's like us now. Mm. We're Nintendo 64 or whatever was closer to 1970 than us.
The N64 is 30 years old next year, I think. 96, 97, that type of time.
Oh, what a class game.
Scary times. Right, just want to play this before we finish out. Murph mentioned it already because there's nice music at the end of this. This is a documentary brought out with Sean O'Gohalpin. Here's a little taster of it.
I'm involved in a very bad car crash. In my naivety, I still think that I can get up and play the game on Sunday. Dr. Khan has to break the news to me. you're lucky if you get back walking properly again after that. It can end up like this. And he says, it won't. If there's anyone to get back, it's you. Those words I clutch onto as hope and faith.
Yep, that is episode one of the new series of Inner Drive with Allianz. It's available on the Off the Ball YouTube if you want to watch it. I would strongly recommend watching as opposed to podcasting this, just purely because it's so pretty. And the one thing I really liked in the middle of that, Páirc Caoimh is wonderful. We did the interview in the gym in the Piercing in Cork. And you see that wall ball area that he's in that has all the kind of seating area on it? It's incredible. They need to relay the indoor surface. He was saying it's not quite what it used to be when they first did it. But they've got like the Napiercic flag up on one side, the Cork flag up on the other side. And it's the most wonderful little indoor arena with kind of plexiglass around the side of it where you can bounce the ball everywhere as well. Not every club has that type of facility.
Unreal.
But that's Sean Hogue. We had a great time with Sean Hogue last year in Limerick. It was great to spend some time with him again. He's just like, he's a ball of energy. Yeah. It's one of the only interviews I've ever done. There's like 2.5, 3 hours long. We didn't stop. I said to him, like, you know, if you need to stop, you need to take a minute, whatever, take a break. Just like a machine gun.
Sean Hogue, you probably only asked him one question as well. And he just went, gone. Just sit back and just start drinking a cup of tea. And Sean Hogue's gone in a good way.
That's the key. Three questions, I think, is all that was in there. And we managed to get the full 45-minute documentary out of it. So if you want to check that out, Off the Ball's videos have got it. And it's also available on Spotify for free in the Off the Ball GAA feed, which is where you can pick up the Hurling Pod if you're not picking us up in the main pod there. And that is it for the main pod this week. Hurling League, done. In the pocket. James Scale, thanking you.
Thanks, guys.
Paul Murphy, thanking you. See you next week.
Thanks very much.
Why do you always smile and say thanks, sir? Why do you always?
I'm always wondering where you're going to go, because you admit it. It's like it's a weakness now at this stage. You keep on saying, "Oh, I don't know what to say."
You said that one very quiet then as well. I'm in now. I'm just very.
It makes me half nervous. Like you're expecting.
You're just good entertainment.
I had a neighbor. He was, God rest him. He was probably 94, 95, right? And he was born in the era, obviously, where there was just, you know, probably I learned off him, black or white.
Right.
Yeah. And like he'd say to everyone, right, when you say good luck, John Joe, he'd say, ah, yeah, good luck and fuck you. And he'd say it to the priest, he'd say it to the nuns, he'd say it to the teachers, why do not, good luck and fuck you. Right. So, if you want me to say that, Liz, I will.
Well, I mean, you can. I had a colleague, by the way, who used to, if you called him middle of the summer, he'd say happy Christmas when he picked up the phone. We used to ring him for a report. This is like such old school stuff here when you think about it. And it was like ringing him on the phone. He used to run a pub, which was also the post office, which was also the shop in a rural town in County Westmeath. So totally old school. Everyone knew him. Ned Flynn, rest his soul, great guy, up around Pollard direction, Castown, Fineacool, Whitehall and Westmeath. And the great thing was, I always wondered what was going to happen the first Christmas, because I had to ring him all the time to get the reports on, you know, the Westmeath underage and stuff. And then you'd ring him at Christmas, and he would say happy birthday or happy summer to you. So he knew how to bury it up. Always put you on the back foot because you never knew where it was going to go.
Yeah, right? That's the shot.
That's what you do, Skill. Have a different answer every time.
Well, I do. Yeah. See, when people ask me, how are you? I say tremendous. And it puts them off straight away. They're like, or I say fabulous. Right? And they're like, what's going on with him? Like straight away. You know the other, yeah. Any crack? No. How are you? Fabulous. Oh, tell us why.
The Irish default is grand, and that's the only thing you can ever say in those circumstances. Right, thank you, lads. We will be back with another podcast next week. We're going to be beginning our look towards the championship very, very soon. All right, see you next week.